If stating the truth is being a racist, then we're in a very sad situation in this country.
You go all the way back to Ferguson, Missouri. From that point forward, the last couple of years, Barack Obama has done nothing but hate on cops.
There is systemic racism in this country, and there are police departments that need to be reformed.
We're going to only end this whole issue when we get control of the significant amount of violence in urban America. I'm not talking about the rest of the country. I'm talking about urban America within the black community. And it's the police who are the ones who are doing that.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:08. It is Monday, July 11th, 2016. Welcome to another day, business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell as we move into another business week. You heard in the opening comments there some of the reaction and aftermath and, well, some of the confrontation, too, about the situation that's going on in America right now. Joe Walsh, the former Chicago congressman there, saying, Mr. Obama, President Obama, has done nothing but hate on cops. Again, putting his foot in his mouth over the weekend. It was reported by the Justice Department and others that cops have never been safer under President Obama, and that he's actually added cops and cops programs. So apparently the facts kind of miss Congressman Walsh there. Of course, you know, he stirred the pot on Friday, and this controversy is not going away. Lots to talk about. That discussion, conversation will be going on throughout the morning here on the Steve Cochran Show and on 720 WGN. But right now, let's get to the WGN Market Desk. Your overnight market intel. Global shares rose today after Wall Street rose on a strong U.S. employment report as investors recovered gradually from post-Brexit jitters. Yes, people are still talking about Brexit. In France, the CAC gained about 1.5%. In Germany, the DAX up about 1.5% as well. Japan's benchmark Nikkei surged 4% to finish at 15,708 following a weekend election that launched the ruling coalition a resounding victory. The Dow futures in this country pointing toward a higher open. The Dow futures up about 69 points this morning. A couple of big stories making the news this morning. We'll get to one of them right away because you may be hungry for it. Breakfast, Chicago-based, almost Chicago-based. See, I almost said it there. Oak Brook still-based McDonald's has announced that McGriddles, you know those McGriddles? They're coming nationally all day to breakfast starting in August at all of its stores nationwide. That announcement came on Friday. McDonald's shares obviously are higher today. In addition to expanding all-day breakfast, other positive changes underway at McDonald's. So McDonald's moving to cage-free eggs, real butter, all kinds of other things as they continue to listen to what customers want. But the McGriddles thing is a huge move because people have been clamoring for that all across the country. McGriddle starting in August at McDonald's. The business day ahead, actually the week ahead, is going to be very, very busy. A number of economic reports, we'll go through those as we move later into the program. Also, there's a new problem facing the Rio Olympics in our second half hour. We'll talk about the preparations for the Summer Games, which are just right around the corner. With a reporter who's been covering the Olympics, we'll tell you about the new problem as well coming up. But first, it is the Allstate CEO Spotlight today, and we focus on MB Financial Bank. And the executive, chief executive officer there is Mark Hoppe. And the question to him is the neighborhood bank dead? Good morning, Mark. First, thanks for being with us here on the Opening Bell today. And I suppose, you know, the first question I'll ask you is, is the neighborhood bank dead? What keeps you up at night? What worries you?
Well, you know, one of the things that you always have to worry about is credit quality, right? That is the one thing that, you know, there are other things that could impact a bank and cause it to fail, but that's by it's far and away the biggest one. So you worry about that all the time. Now, knock on wood, our credit quality is really strong now. This credit quality that we see in the in MB today, I think is better than it's ever been. But we're very diligent, you know, day in and day out, you know, keeping on top of things from a portfolio management perspective, or when we look at new opportunities or increased opportunities, with the existing companies, we have that in our mind. We all paid a lot of tuition, you know, between 08 and 2011, and know how painful it is, and I think we're very cognizant of that. So while that's something you always worry about, I feel pretty comfortable about where we are right now.
Do you think that the lessons have been learned from 2008, or do you think that there are still lessons to be learned from 2008?
There are always lessons to be learned, but I think we've learned a lot of lessons. And I'm not just saying us, MB. I think our industry has. You know, what I do worry about is there are non-bank players in our industry lending, and they don't have the regulation that we have. They don't have the capital requirements that we have, we being, you know, financial institutions that are regulated. So I worry a little bit about that. You know, they're doing some things that are, you know, out of the ordinary and beyond what they should be doing. We're really trying to stick to our knitting. And as I look at the competition that we have, not just in the Chicago metro area, but in the Midwest and nationally, we have a number of national businesses. I think the banks, by and large, are playing the game much better than we did before and are being pretty consistent. It's still extremely aggressive from a competitive perspective, but mostly that comes out in pricing.
When you say a non-bank entity, so that our listeners have an idea of what you mean or who you mean, what do you mean?
Well, there are there are like fintech companies, right, that are doing lending now, right, and they don't have the regulation that we have. There are things that refer to or organizations refer to as BDCs, business development corporations. And they get money from hedge funds, et cetera, and they go to the market and get, you know, capital. But again, they're not subject to the regulatory environment that we are, and so they're able to do things a little bit differently than we are. And I think certainly some of them are doing things farther out in the risk profile than we would be comfortable doing.
So they're not; they don't have to adhere to those regulations. Do they? Could they impact the overall banking climate if they did something really wrong? I mean, if there was a problem,
they could. But in comparison to the regulated industry, they're very, very small right now. But certainly, we run into those organizations. You know, looking at different situations, different opportunities to do banking with, to financing with clients and prospects. And so they do impact, but it's kind of on the margin. So I don't see it as a situation where it could, you know, tip things over because they're very small in comparison to the industry.
Mark Hoppe, we'll continue our conversation here on the opening bell this morning. Our Allstate CEO Spotlight, of course, sponsored by Allstate.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The latest jobs report showed the economy adding 100,000 more positions in June than had been forecast. Markets on Friday reacted positively. The Dow Jones jumped 251 points to close at 18,147. The NASDAQ picked up nearly 80 points. The S&P 500 narrowly missed, setting a new closing high. Britain's Treasury chief is visiting the United States for talks with Wall Street insiders. George Osborne's trip to New York is the first in a series of missions to urge some of the biggest investors to stick with the UK at a time of uncertainty after the vote to leave the European Union. After months of decline, Gap says a key sales figure rose 2% last month, the retailer's first monthly increase in more than a year. Gap, which operates its namesake stores as well as Old Navy and Banana Republic, has been struggling with falling sales for months. And it's 7-Eleven Day. Customers can enjoy a free small Slurpee from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's a special year for the flavored icy treat that turns 50 years old. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 519. Welcome back to the program. Our CEO Spotlight today, in our CEO Spotlight, sponsored by Allstate, is the CEO of MB Financial Bank. The chairman and CEO of that company, Mark Hoppe, is with us in studio today as our conversation about his work as CEO of one of the Midwest's biggest bank continues here on The Opening Bell. You've talked about things that have happened since 2008. From your perspective, from a consumer's perspective, how has banking changed? And do you think it's changed for the better since 2008 for the consumer?
Yeah, I think it really has, primarily because of mobile banking with your telephone. From a mobile perspective, you know, the access that they have to their financial institution, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year is just exceedingly better for the consumers than it was. Then you look at interest rates. Well, if you're saving, quite frankly, it's not so good. But if you want to refinance your house or you want to buy a new house, interest rates, I've been in the business since 1977, and clearly since then we've never had interest rates where they are regarding home mortgages. If you look at car loans, the interest rate on those is extremely low. So from a consumer perspective, you know, there are some pretty good advantages, both from a rate perspective as well as from an access perspective.
You talked about the phones and mobile banking.
Right.
Is that going to be the future of banking? Are we going to see fewer tellers and have fewer experiences in a brick-and-mortar bank and more experiences mobile and technology?
Make it the answer real simple, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to do, and we know it's going that way. And and the largest institutions, I think, as we look at things, and we being MB, we look at things as that consumer, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to compete on the consumer side because there's so much money involved from the technological perspective to be able to have all the bells and whistles day in and day out on the consumer side. You know, we've got a great consumer base. I think we do a terrific job of dealing with them. But if all they want is to use their phone to access us, they probably have other institutions to do it better. If they want something from us, if they want a personal loan, if they want a mortgage loan, that type of thing, that's going to be a little bit different. But just pure consumer, you know, I've got my checking account and savings account. You know, there are technological advances that just from a financial perspective, we could never compete with, you know, Chase or a B of A or a Wells Fargo because they're, you know, they've got so much strength and size advantage over us.
Talk to me about your world as a CEO. What is it that you bring to your role every day that either drives your employees and drives your businesses and creates a positive forward motion?
Well, you know, one of the things you have to do is you have to be all things to all people, you know, as much as you can. I mean, you can't be overboard about that, right? But you've got to do it in appropriate moderation. And so one of the things you have to be is you have to communicate. You have to communicate with the employees. You have to communicate with the clients. You have to communicate with what we call centers of influence, the accountants and the attorneys and others who, you know, are providing us with business opportunities. And I think another thing that's very, very, very important is you have to be approachable, because if people aren't telling you people are happy to tell you what's going right, but if your employees aren't telling you what's going wrong or your clients aren't telling you what's going wrong, that's a problem, right? Because mm-hmm. you're going to get surprised, and surprises are not fun in our business. I don't think they're fun in any business, but particularly in ours. And one of the other things I always talk about is we've got to celebrate our successes. You know, and I think people feel good about that when you recognize what they do, when you recognize something an employee does that's extraordinary, when you recognize something that a company does that's extraordinary. You know, our clients, their business is part of their family, right? Because almost all of our businesses are family-owned businesses or a couple of families or a partnership, et cetera. And so that's a meaningful part of them. So recognizing that and congratulating on those successes, I think, is an important thing.
As much as being a business, you're also sort of a community leader in your role as CEO, are you not?
Correct. You know, I mention this a lot. I mean, the community gives us a lot at MB. You know, we depend upon the community to survive and thrive. We want to give back. We want to show the community that we care about the community. You know, this metropolitan area. Our largest business, right, is in the Chicago metro area. We've got a lot of businesses that are national, but with our middle market lending business, with our small business lending, our business banking, with our consumer business, with our retail operation, it's local. And we want to give back in as much as we can to the communities within the larger community that give back so much to us.
How important is that moving forward, especially with the new demographic that people seem to be paying a lot of attention to from a consumer standpoint, and that is this millennials group who are very socially conscious.
Right.
They want to do business with companies that do give back, that are planted in their communities. How much do you pay attention to those parts of the consumer base as you move forward into the future?
Well, whether it's the right thing or not, I look at my kids, and they're 35, 31, 28, and 26. And what's interesting is in their careers, our oldest is in a small education-related not-for-profit in the city. So she understands right about giving back. My next child is a son. He's in the financial services industry. He's been involved with working for a not-for-profit, I think, since he was like 22 years old or 23 years old. Same with my third child, my daughter, who works for a large company in the real estate business, and she has been involved for a couple of years. And our youngest, who's about a year and a half out of school and in the workforce, he is actively looking to do it. So that this millennial, it really is true, right? They really do want to give back. I mean, when I was their age, I wasn't doing this type of thing. I do a lot of it today. Mm-hmm. It's very important to me personally. It's very important. You know, my wife has always been involved in charity giving as well, and both time and treasure. And it's really important. And it is important to the company as well, right? Because it gets you out in the community, and it helps from that perspective. But if that's all it was, if that's all you're using it for, you're not going to do a very good job, right? You're not going to be able to be effective to the groups that you're dealing with. But back to your point about the millennials, it is really there. And I can see it through my kids and through other friends who have children who are the same age range. They're doing the exact same thing. I'm proud of them.
And the brand loyalty among the group, too, is really what stands out. They find the brand that they like, and they're loyal to it.
Right.
So you either get them off the top or you don't.
That's correct. Yeah, from a consumer perspective, mm-hmm. that's exactly right.
Mark Hoppe is the CEO of MB Financial Bank in Chicago. He's been in that position since 2010. He is in our Allstate CEO Spotlight today. Mark Hoppe, the CEO of MB Financial Bank. By the way, you can listen to our full interview later this morning online at WGNradio.com. You can also listen to past CEO Spotlight segments from the opening bell.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. 5:38. Welcome back to the opening bell. 1 month before the Rio de Janeiro Olympics, the Summer Games, 2016 Summer Games, there is a new problem for Rio. This morning, Reuters is reporting that Brazilian scientists have discovered a drug-resistant bacteria at some of the city's beaches. Researchers say that many of the waterways are plugged with sewage, local hospitals channeling also waste into the bay. It is just the latest in a series of problems for Rio, which is still putting the finishing touches on projects. Here's some hammering there. Natural sound from Rio this morning as they put the finishing touches on stuff. We want to talk about this morning here on the opening bell with Ben Fisher, who is a reporter for Sports Business Journal. And we spoke with you, Ben. Good morning, first of all. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
We talked to you a couple months ago about preparations for the games. It is go time now. What are you hearing? Are they ready?
Well, that's sort of an interesting question, because in a lot of the traditional sense of that question, they are ready. The venues are in reasonably good shape, and the administrators of the sports themselves are pretty confident that the fields of play are going to be ready and that hotels are going to be ready. So this isn't an Athens 2004 situation where the basic capacity to host the competitions is in question. It's basically everything else around that in the city of Rio that's causing concerns right now.
And that is, you bring up a couple of points there. First, about the structures being ready. Just a couple of months ago, they were not. Is there any concern about the quality of what has been put up?
Well, you know, I ask that question almost daily to various people on the beat, and I wonder how certain can you be of something that is still coming together at the last second. But they do test events and various checkings on the facilities, and all I can do is listen to what they say. And they say that you know, the sod might be going down the last couple of days before August 5th, but that they're pretty confident the athletes at least are going to have a pretty high quality experience.
And ticket sales too, have they improved? I know from a flight standpoint, we checked in with FareCompare.com, Rick Cini, our airline expert, about this last week. He said that flights were full, that tickets were being bought for the Olympics. People are going. Are tickets improved? Because I think the last time we spoke with you that not even half had been sold.
Right. I heard a number last week from the Brazilian sports minister, who's new in his job, by the way, because of some of the turmoil there, that they're at about 70% sold right now, which under traditional situations in Brazil wouldn't be too unusual. It's they say it's a very last-minute planning culture. But given the profound recession down there, you know, it's an open question whether there's actually the capacity in the market to close that gap in the final week. So there could be some empty spots right there if that doesn't change in a hurry. About 70% right now, they say.
Brazil certainly has had its problems. In addition to Zika virus, crime in Rio, there has been an impeachment of the president there. All of this in the backdrop of what should be a moment in time for South America, Brazil in particular, to shine. They have to be really thinking to themselves, what did we get ourselves into?
Well, it's a look at all of the downsides of planning this so far out. The Olympics have gotten so big that you have to have 5 or 6 years of run-up to plan for things. And 7 years ago, Brazil was the darling of the world economy. It was the recession worldwide, but they didn't take it nearly as deep a dive, and they bounced back a lot faster. And in 2009, when it was selected, it seemed like the world's next great hotspot. And, you know, hindsight's 2020, but that seems like it was a big mistake. And, you know, there's a lot on everyone in Brazil's mind, not even counting the Olympics right now. So they just got a lot on their plate. And the Olympics is just one of many things that's got folks concerned there.
Well, let's move away from the problems and talk about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. Some of the American athletes that are headed there, I don't recognize their names. Some of the familiar faces that we've, I think, all have been used to over the years at Olympics, have they retired and moved on, or they just didn't make it this year?
Well, there's something of a changing the guard in some of the major American sports. Generally speaking, there weren't any huge stories in the last couple of weeks as far as people who were widely expected to make the games who didn't qualify through trials or have other injuries. But some of the tried and true names aren't going to be there in a significant way as they had been in the past. Missy Franklin, the swimmer who was such a huge star in 2012, did make the team, but only in a few events, not near the level of domination she had 4 years ago. Sonia Richards-Ross, track and field star who had been around for a while. She did not qualify, and she made the transition to broadcaster very shortly after realizing she wouldn't make a return trip. But, you know, she's in her 30s, and that's not entirely unexpected. Generally speaking, you know, there's something of a new generation coming along, but there'll still be plenty of familiar names there. And in some of the major team sports, basketball and golf is missing some stars. But Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony will still be on the basketball team, even if LeBron James and Steph Curry are taking the summer off.
Michael Phelps will be back. I saw that. And there's still some Olympic qualifying going on, isn't there?
You know, I think at this point, as of yesterday, with the track and field and the women's gymnastics wrapping up, I think the majority of the team is set. But it's some of this stuff comes together very late minute, or in the last couple of days. So, you know, you never know exactly who you're dealing with from a brand sponsorship endorsement perspective until the last few weeks.
You talked about some of the big names, basketball, NBA names, but a lot of these athletes are just kids who've been doing this their whole life. They're not professional athletes in the sense that they don't get a lot of money. And this brings up the whole way the United States funds or doesn't fund its Olympic team. It is really a sense of, unlike other countries, they really have to beg for their money and rely on donations, don't they?
Right. The United States is really unique in the world that these are not government programs, by and large. The United States Olympic Committee and its subsidiary sports governance bodies rely entirely on commercial sponsorships, private sector donations, and the athletes' own savings. And obviously that's not the case in basketball and golf, where these guys are making many millions of dollars in their professional careers. But it's a surprisingly grassroots, salt-of-the-earth operation in a lot of these sports. And that leads to some hard feelings over the sponsorship rules that limit the right to use even the word Olympics in your campaign. It's something that triggered a lot of controversy and outrage over the years. There's always a business story surrounding the games, is how athletes can support themselves while not running afoul of the marketing and intellectual property laws that the Olympics are really harsh protectors of their own rights on.
Yeah, I was reading a story about one, I think, a fencing athlete who has to spend about $1,200 on his weapons, or rather his just his the uniform, the Olympic uniform, $300 to $400 on the weapons. Then there are other kinds of fees. He said it was about $20,000 a year at least. So that kind of gives you an idea. Can people like you and me donate to the Olympic effort and help these kids out?
Yeah, the United States Olympic Committee has a charitable foundation that's like any nonprofit you can give to. And they certainly will gladly take your donations and have a few premiums, I think, that are associated with giving at certain levels. And that's a big part of their business, is just trying to keep that philanthropic side of things running.
I know I'm a reporter, and I hate to ask this question, but I know we should get probably through these Olympics before we think about the next. But is there any sense? I know Tokyo has the next Summer Games, right, in 2020?
Yes.
So is there any thought about after that, bringing them back to the United States? Are you hearing any rumblings about that at all?
Well, absolutely, yeah. The Los Angeles 2024 bid committee is up and running, and will be very well represented in Rio. It's starting to make the case that in 2024 they should return to Los Angeles and the United States for the first time since 1996 in Atlanta. And they're up and running and are competing with Paris and Rome and Budapest right now. So that'll be a story that I'll be covering down there in Rio, is how the leaders of Los Angeles, both public and private sector there, will be starting to make the case and sort of in a soft touch sort of way, start to win some hearts and minds in the IOC.
It is Ben Fischer at Ben Fischer, SBJ. That's FISCHER, reporter for Sports Business Daily, the Sports Business Journal. Ben, thank you. Make sure you take your mosquito repellent and antibiotics as well if you're headed down there. We'll look forward to hearing from you down there.
That's a good idea. I'll be in touch.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Ben Fischer again from Sports Business Daily, Sports Business Journal. You can follow Sports Business Journal at SBJSBD on Twitter and at SportsBusinessDaily.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
552 on The Opening Bell from the WGN Market Desk. Dow futures higher this morning, up about 69 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. S&P is actually moving near record territory for a record open this morning. We'll be watching those numbers very closely as we move forward. But right now, let's get an update on the latest commodities. Good morning, Ori and Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look back at last week and up and down market, particularly in the grain market, but a pretty good rally on Friday and basically bargain buying after declining sharply earlier last week. Concerns about hot, dry weather stressing both crops, corn and beans, as they head toward key development phases did add to the strength. But we'll be getting the weekly crop progress reports this afternoon. And for the last 4 or 5 weeks, best condition corn, soybean crops in Wisconsin. And this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we flew Air Orion at about 4,000 feet from here up to La Crosse, well, actually Wespe, and then back again on Sunday. I have never seen Wisconsin crops look better. And they are 85% good to excellent corn, 83% good to excellent on soybeans. So we ended the week with a pretty good bounce in soybeans, up 36.5 cents. Corn was up 13.5, and wheat was up 9.75. Different story in the livestock futures at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Although a modest gain Friday, and at the end, the August cattle contract was up 42 cents a hundredweight, and the hog markets tended to roll lower because of the Goldman roll at the moment. And so the most actively traded August ended down $1.30. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. As we close out the opening bell here, I thought we'd do something really funny. In preparing for the show this morning, just going to give you a little behind-the-scenes work, I asked a freelance friend of mine to send me some audio. The head of the Olympic Committee in Rio apparently had a news briefing yesterday, and it'd be kind of nice to hear what he has to say. And in my inbox this morning, I did get some sound, but this is what it sounded like.
As Olimpíadas se constituem num momento de união internacional, de pacificação nacional, de harmonia nacional.
If you speak Portuguese, maybe you can help me decipher, translate that. It really did no good for me. But it kind of gives you an idea of what we have to go through to put a broadcast on the air today. I guess I should probably learn Portuguese. I did learn French, no Spanish as well. I think the Olympic people are supposed to speak in French, aren't they? I mean, that's the language of the Olympics. But anyway, that's the head of the Olympic Committee in Brazil talking about the Olympics. I'm assuming he says they're ready, but who knows?